If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings, welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. It's episode 275. It's our 2023 Amiga European Masters Bets Pod. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss our selections for this week's DP World Tour action from Crans, Montana, in Switzerland. Good morning, gents.
Morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
Please subscribe to this podcast. You drive the popularity of the show. The podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more info. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world famous golf betting system website where we have Paul's in-depth betting preview for the Amiga, the strokes gained rankings for the European Masters, course form stats combined with current form stats in one easy table, plus our predictor model. All of this content, like this podcast, completely free of charge with no paywall. We're on Twitter, or X. I'm going to have to start saying X dash Twitter. Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. Please keep them coming. They are very, very important to us. Leave your name and where you are in the review. This one is entitled The Best Five Stars. I've been a long-time listener to the Golf Betting System podcast. No one out there digs into a course preview just like these guys. Meticulous in their approach. And they sprinkle in a little bit of Barry magic from over the Irish Sea. It's the perfect weekly listen to anyone interested in watching pro golf, regardless of whether you're a heavy punter. Be prepared to learn more about agronomy and weather conditions than you should possibly imagine. Thanks for the good work, fellas. And that is from Punters Medium. And Punters Medium is in the UK. Thank you, Punters.
Yeah, very good. Thank you very much for taking the time. Bit of Barry magic this week then, Barry.
Maybe, yeah. Missed it last week. Thanks for that, Punters. I wonder, is that Punters Medium as in he can talk to like the golfing spirits and get like, you know, advanced tips on punters, or if that's just his, if that's just his size? I'm not sure.
Wouldn't it be nice to have a little bit of a supernatural insight and knowledge, eh?
Yeah, I mean, we've had a good few weeks. Last week, hit the crossbar.
Can you do?
Tour Championship. Clearly, Victor Hovland's now the best player on the planet right now. Interesting to note, chaps. We now have in Europe... what does it say here? We now have three Europeans in the top four in the world. The last time that happened was 9 years ago. Europe went one better then, with four Euros in the top five, September 2014. Back then it was Rory, Adam Scott, Garcia, Stenson and Rose. Now it's, of course, Rahm, Hovland and McIlroy behind Scotty Scheffler. So that's good omens for the Ryder Cup, a proper spearhead.
Yeah, absolutely. But it is with the way that Hovland's playing. He's got it on a string at the moment. He's... absolutely top of his game, isn't he? Mopped up, was it $21.6 million, I think I read, that he'd earned in the last week or so. Decent bread.
Him and Xander shot 19 under, yes. Genuine score. Of course, Hovland with the strokes gained thingamajig index. 1 by 5. Unfortunately, we had Sepp Straka, didn't we?
Yeah.
Who's going to talk us through Sepp Straka on Sunday?
Oh, go on, Barry.
I think the hardest thing about it was we didn't get to see a shot of his on Sunday, at least that I was able to catch. I was watching all of it, so maybe I blinked and missed it. But, you know, it was he was there, he wasn't, he was there, he wasn't. He looked really solid at one stage, and then out of nowhere, 15 happened, wedge in hand, and yanked it into the bunker and makes double, and that was it. And then there was a chance of getting a chop of a place, and you knew Morikawa was going to make that birdie on 18 just to really stick the dagger in. It's disappointing. Really good. I think it's a really good bet. Just one shot or two shots shy of getting the full payout.
Yeah, disappointing when you've got a player who's gone that many holes to get themselves into the position to pay you out at nice juicy price from an each way perspective. And then, yeah, because there's so little value in that event anyway. Awful. I mean, even if you'd have gone for Hovland, what was Hovland? Best price, 5-1, I think.
5-1. Win outright. Yeah, I've marked him up on my stats, 5-1 winner.
Yeah. And, you know, if you were picking out a Hovland or a Xander for the 72 hole score, you were getting kind of 12s, 14s, that kind of price, weren't you? So again, it was hardly value packed. So to have a guy who's right in with the chance of getting an each way place at three figures or thereabouts, depending how you played it, just to miss out, galling.
That shows you how bad that is for a betting event. The 72 hole stroke play betting odds, okay? Xander was 12-1. Victor Hovland was best price 10-1. And not only that, they both tied for the lead in that market. So you're getting everything chopped by 50%.
Uh-huh. That's a killer.
That is an absolute bitch.
So, I think our strategy was okay. Try find a long price player for that market. And look, if he wins, amazing, but it's really about trying to get him into the top five places.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yep.
We just didn't get the right guy. Or he didn't. But that's the difference in a golf bet working, right? It's just one or two shots just changes.
I think on that 72-hole market, from my memory, there's only Kevin Na that's coming from total left field. And that was also a year where him and Rahm shared the top spot. He was 70-1. Everyone else has been 7-1 to 12-1. That's where if you're trying to pick that winner, you need to be in that 8 to 12 to 1. It's going to be one of those.
Yeah.
And you know, clearly Xander's there at that kind of price point everywhere. Anyway, let's forget about the Tour Championship. Talk us through Europe, Paul, the Czech Masters. You had Nikolaj Højgaard in position all week. Well, we all did. We were all on board. I was on board anyway. I don't know if Barry was on board. You were on board, yeah. So we're all on board the Højgaard train. And there's some guy that won this tournament. I've never even heard of the chap.
Todd Clements.
Never heard of the bloke.
If you'd have managed to pluck him out, which you'd have done, you'd have been, I don't know, he'd have had some kind of crystal ball, I expect, to pluck him out before the event, given his incoming form. But 400-1, he was in places. Now, the only thing that you could really grab onto was the fact that he's good friends with Daniel Brown, who won the week before. And if you'd have been one of those eagle-eyed punters watching the celebrations at the end, he was the first guy onto the 18th green with the champagne at the end. And you know, did that inspire him? You'd like to think, in some capacity, it's triggered something in his mind to think, you know, Dan's won. I want to go out there and do the same. But to do it in the manner that he did, I mean, this is a guy that's not finished inside the top 10 of a DP World Tour event at all in the past. Best this season of 21st on the DP World Tour. Coming off missed cuts, he didn't make the final round of the ISPS World the week before. But he's coming to this in position to contend, at least going into the final round. 9-under through 12, holing absolutely everything. I think he made 160 feet of putts or something.
Nice. That's more than Scheffler makes in four rounds.
Exactly, yeah. It's, you know, you're just seeing absolutely everything hit the bottom of the cup. And, no one else can get close to him. In the end, Nikolai was third. You know, even if Clements hadn't have done that, then Matt Wallace was there. But if you look at Højgaard's numbers, first for strokes gained off the tee, kind of expect that when he's playing well. Second for strokes gained tee to green, very impressive. Lost strokes on the greens. And, you know, again, just from eyeballing him, the number of 7-8 footers, even shorter, that he missed during the course of those 4 days. You know, you can always lament it afterwards, but the guy could have won by 10, well, not by 10, but he could have been 8 or 10 shots better than he was. And, you know, in a serious position to have won that for all three of us and an awful lot of people out there in the social media world. Every man and his dog was on Nicolai last week, and a collective sigh across the industry, sadly. But we move on.
We do move on. PGA Tour, no action this week. Today, we're recording this Tuesday morning in the UK, early. Zach Johnson announces his picks for the Ryder Cup. Now we know Scheffler, Clark, Harman, Cantlay, Homer, Xander. They're in. 7 through 12 in the standings. Koepka, Spieth, Cam Young, Morikawa, Keegan Bradley, Sam Burns. Clearly, he can make 6 captain's picks. Strong rumours out there that Fowler and JT will be selected, leaving Keegan Bradley, Sam Burns, outside of the team. Mm. Those thoughts are undoubtedly, or were undoubtedly, being priced up that way by bookmakers last week and into the early hours of Monday over here before the markets came down. So, your thoughts on that, chaps? JT's going to be in. I kind of see it. I mean, as I said, I alluded to last week, there's Andy Lack put a podcast out there on his Inside Golf podcast. We chatted about this in, you know, for over an hour about the picks for both US and Europe. And Andy's view, which is quite common over in North America, is that, you know, Zach will listen to the likes of Fred Couples and Tiger Woods, and will take JT and will take Fowler. And I'm sure the PGA of America will love that because the band's back together. Rick is there, Jordan's there, and JT's there. So it all kind of packages together quite nicely. The only thing it probably doesn't package together nicely for is for America actually winning at Marco Simone.
Yep.
But they do have a habit of making captain's pick selections like that. They've got form. They've very much got form. I'm just reaching for a statistic here. Historic captain's picks from the USA. 2014, Glenn Eagles. Keegan Bradley, Hunter Mahan, Webb Simpson. 2018, Le Golf National. Bryson DeChambeau, Tony Finau, Phil Mickelson, Tiger Woods. Add all of those matches together that the captain's picks played. 4 wins, 15 losses, 2 halves. So American captains do have a habit of picking the wrong people for European Ryder Cup golf course conditions. And I've got a feeling that Zach's fallen into exactly the same trap. Because Andy was on the same wavelength. I mean, I at the time of podcasted Glover, but I did say it's a romantic pick. He said that Keegan Bradley should have been the additional captain's pick of JT space. And you could also make a very, very valid case, statistically anyway, for Russell Henley, which is true. But yeah, it's going to be JT and Fowler.
Yeah, it would appear that way. Certainly before the markets went down, that was the suggestion that JT would be that final pick. And again, as you say, a lot of the noise coming out of the alleged people in the know would be that that he's there. I think a Glover, someone of that ilk, needed to win. A Keegan Bradley needed to win last week at East Lake, which is a monumental task in itself. But they needed to win to really force any kind of pressure. Yeah. Didn't happen.
I don't know about you, but that the inclusion of JT for me, although, of course, he's literally on-field vice-captain, him and Jordan call the shots. But when you've got Jordan Spieth and JT walking out on Friday morning, and theoretically they could get absolutely tonked by a European team, That's got to give Team Europe a boost, knowing that those two are likely to be paired in the heat of battle Friday morning.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And there's two players there that, in their current guise, do not fit that golf course whatsoever.
Would it surprise you if he came out and played great? The bad form just melted away. His form has been, not great. Everybody's seen that. But he could find just that kind of wave to ride for the week. Now, that said, it could be a fragile wave and it could all fall apart. He could end up shooting a couple of 80s.
Mm.
But it wouldn't surprise me if he did play really well.
No, and ultimately, he doesn't have to be played 5 games, doesn't have to be played 4 games or 3 games. If the form isn't there, and these guys practice rounds, they'll be able to gauge that. If it's more about the strength of the team as a unit and the way that it's seen is that JT is part of that unit, then I can understand the decision.
Yeah, if it's better psychologically for the camp to have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you're saying it'd be better for the camp that JT would be in the team rather than Keegan Bradley staring at everybody.
Yeah.
And not conversing. Just sitting in a corner with his dunce's hat on, staring at everybody. Twitching.
Mm.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying. So that seems to be the vibe from America. We might have it wrong, but I don't think we have. Right. Now, Europe. The qualification ends after the Amiga European Masters. So it's good to see Matt Fitzpatrick overheading the entry list. It's all pretty academic, but my understanding is if he finishes T7 or better, he jumps above Tommy Fleetwood in the points in the world points list and gets automatic pick.
Mm.
It's irrelevant, really, isn't it? Because clearly,
one's picked, one's in. It's immaterial.
It doesn't, but it does get slightly more complex than that. I mean, European points, McIlroy, Rahm head that clearly in. You then jump across to the world points list, Hovland, Hatton, Fleetwood, Fitzpatrick. So there's six in. Straka, seventh on that list. Lowry, Rose. We've got no problem with any of these names. You then jump to Robert McIntyre. Now, McIntyre is the incumbent of the last European points position at the moment. He sits above. All of these five have chances of jumping into Luke Donald's team this week, mathematically. Yannick Paul, Adrian Maronk, Victor Perez, Rasmus Højgaard, Adrian Otaegi. So it gets slightly complex at that point, doesn't it? Who can walk the listeners through this in the most succinct way to keep it as simple as possible? I don't think it's me. I don't think it's me.
where it depends where the decision lies, because the names you mentioned, one of them needs to win this week. A Yannick Paul needs to win this week to dislodge a Bob McIntyre, and that will create some turbulence in the the prospective team. A lot of this is rumours. You can base a lot of the thought processes on the markets that unfortunately have been taken down, because it was interesting to see where the bookies were pitching each of these players. But when we talked about this last week, Ludvig Åberg was odds on. He was around about 2-1 on to make the team. Now, this is a guy who's got, a dozen or so professional events, hasn't won on either tours. Played well last week, fourth last week. Over in the Czech Republic. But the suggestion is, and quite a strong suggestion, is that he'll be picked. Mm. And he'll be picked because the meticulous way that the Europeans are working through who should be in the team is done in a kind of mechanical fashion based on who's going to be the best fit for Marco Simone Golf Club.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, Adrian Maronk's just outside the qualification for this as it stands.
Yeah, on both points lists.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yet again, he was strong odds on to make the team. Now, Adrian Maronk won at Marco Simone earlier this year. So he's got some course proven form, which undoubtedly from that win, as has Bob McIntyre, as has Nicolai Højgaard. Both of them are one on the course. But Maronk has been playing some fantastic golf, but sits outside the qualification on both counts. Now, if Yannick Paul does make it through, if Yannick Paul wins this week or does whatever he needs to do to dislodge Bob McIntyre, if McIntyre is a pick regardless, which, you know, you could debate that for a long time, then that creates another issue because you're losing people at the bottom end. You're losing the potential to take a Maronk or to take a Ludvig Åberg. I guess from Donald's perspective, if the status quo remains as it is and Bob McIntyre sticks and stays in the final automatic qualification spot, then that probably makes his selections a little bit easier.
Ategi and Rasmus Højgaard need to win to have a chance. Victor Perez needs to finish in second place alone or to win to have a chance. Maronk needs to finish in a tie for second with just one player or better to have a chance. Paul will qualify if he wins. He would need to finish at least tied for third with two others or better to have a chance. But for what we're saying, it's almost exactly what we saw at the Tour Championship last week, where a Lucas Glover, a Keegan Bradley or a Sam Burns needed to win the Tour Championship to make sure that JT wasn't on the team. Mm. And if we're going down the same route, there's strong suggestions that Åberg's on the team. And the only way that Åberg, Maronk and McIntyre don't all get into the team is if one of these other players literally does what they need to do under the most intense pressure this week.
Yeah.
Be that Victor Perez, Rasmus Højgaard, Adrian Ategi, or Yannick Paul. Is that kind of where we're at?
I think so, yeah. There's not a great deal more logic to it, I don't think. It's is someone going to hold their hand up at the 11th hour? And we've seen it before. We saw it with Matt Wallace a few years ago. Win right at the end, throw your name very firmly into the ring, but does it still wash when push comes to shove? And Luke may well have made his mind up already.
So if Nicolai Højgaard was to win this week, having played some great golf in the States, finished second last week and then wins this week, but they pick Åberg over him, bearing in mind Højgaard is a fantastic driver of the golf ball, Nicolai,
and a course winner.
Wow. The other thing that does give you a little bit of feeling that this is all preordained as well is, and we've discussed this over the last few weeks, Alex Noren, Seamus Power, there's an injury issue there, Aaron Rye, none of them have come across to Europe to play. It's almost as if they knew that it was a pointless exercise anyway.
For Seamus to do, just speaking on the Irish angle, for Seamus to, I don't think he could have accumulated enough points on the European points list to pop up that list.
He was contending on the world's points list, wasn't he? But I don't know if there would have been enough points that way to get in, but
he just had just dreadful timing with the injury, just when you needed to be playing or just keeping his form ticking over, it just that the injury comes in and just kind of knocks him back. It's a bit of a shame for him because earlier this year he looked like he was on a nice trajectory to get to make the team.
Mm. Yep.
It's Czechmasters standard golf. I understand that, but you have to say that Paul, Victor Perez, the Højgaards, they're all trying as hard as they can to get into this team. They're putting their hands up and playing good golf. Mm. They're trying. So it'd be interesting to see whether any of those named can actually piece it together under the gun this week and force the hand of Luke Donald.
Do we all feel that there's, if McIntyre stays in his spot there, then let's say everything stays the same in the points right now and the automatics are McIlroy, Rahm, McIntyre, Hovland, Hatton, Fleetwood. So we're now looking at Fitzpatrick, Straka, Lowry, Rose. Everybody's happy with that. That's probably going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if Adrian Maronk doesn't get a pick, it's just absurd. He's fourth in the race to Dubai. He's, you know, I can't see how he doesn't get a pick. Mm-hmm. So everybody else we've been talking about is fighting for that one spot, or if the fight might already be done. So it's, you know, you're looking at Højgaard, Åberg. I just don't think anybody, I think it's a coin flip between the two of them. I don't think anybody else comes into that conversation versus them.
No, I don't. And you know,
and that, is that that's Nikolai, not Rasmus, right? Even though Rasmus is higher up the points list.
Given the course history and the fact that he is, you know, the hotter hand right now. If one of those guys wins this week, if it ends up being an Åberg, Højgaard shootout, Nikolai, that is, and you know, one of those guys wins and gets in, you know, effectively on merit, then, you know, fair play to him. I just get this feeling that the bookies probably aren't wrong. The rumours probably aren't wrong, and Åberg probably is that guy who is in pole position for that final spot. Rightly or wrongly.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting to see.
So, I mean, irrespective of what the end result of that coin flip toss-up is, I'm feeling a lot more positive about the European team and our chances than I was maybe 5-6 weeks ago.
Mm. You've got some very strong players at the top of that team who can compete and will compete with the very best that the US team will bring over.
Yes. I think our team's slotting into place quite nicely.
Mm.
I really do. I think, it's literally this coin toss at the end, isn't it, between Nikolai Højgaard or Ludvig Åberg, by the looks, unless someone really does force their hand in. But I'd take one of the two. I think they're two very talented golfers who are going to be, you know, in the future, both of those guys are going to be, you know, in the elite level list of golfers, undoubtedly, for me.
It'd be interesting to see how the tee times work out this week, because if Luke ends up, you know, pairing himself or with the vice captains with these guys, which you'd expect, will that impact their performance this week?
Yeah, we'll find that out today, won't we, later?
Yeah, a little bit later on Tuesday.
I don't know if that's fair or not, really, when you've got people doing that, but yeah.
It happens.
Yeah, it didn't really... He played with Lowry last week, didn't he? Was that right? I don't think he played any of the ones that were really in the shootout for qualification.
I think that's a different thing. He's playing with Lowry because, you know, Lowry was getting a pick anyway. So that's more a management style thing rather than a can you play under the pressure.
Mm.
He's actually a worry for me, Shane Lowry. He's playing very poor golf at the moment. He's got to be a weakness for the team, but clearly he's in. And I would never suggest that he shouldn't be, but he's one of the ones with current form. I mean, we've got so many players playing well at the moment. You're always going to have some players in the team that aren't playing so well. And you'd put Lowry in that category at the moment. But I don't see him being a big problem for the team. Shall we move on to the Amiga European Masters, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
In terms of best bookmaker for the 2023 Amiga European Masters, we're highlighting Bet365, who as ever have their each-way extra market available, which gives you the option to increase or decrease the number of places when you are betting pre-event on the outright market. We have a situation with Bet365 right now where they are offering boosted odds on Nikolai Højgaard to win. He's been boosted from 18-1 to 20-1. You've also got Robert McIntyre, who has been boosted from 25-1 to 28-1. Of course, we recommend Bet365. If you are 18 plus and do not have a Bet365 sports account, you can find details of their current bet £10, get £30 in free bets, new customer promotion, plus a link through to that very offer with T's and C's in the podcast description. Don't forget to use the bonus code SPORT 30 when registering. That is Sport 30 when registering. Over to you, Paul. You worked long and hard across the weekend and into your bank holiday Monday. Take us through your tips preview, please.
Just to that point on Luke Donald playing. Actually, I've just gone through the list and he's not actually in the field, which makes a level of sense. Yeah, I know. Oh, okay. I'd taken for granted that him and the likes of Francesco Molinari be playing, but. You'd expect them to be there to keep an eye on it.
Oh, yeah, I think that's a good move, though, don't you? I think it's a good move to keep everything. He can be there watching it or not there, be there watching it, and just let the guys fight it out. Don't start interjecting yourself in a group that's playing with this guy or that guy. Stay away.
It does take that out of the equation, which I think is, I think that's fairer in that respect. Absolutely. Amiga European Masters up at Croix-sur-Sierre, up in the Swiss Alps. Fantastic images as ever of the course. Check them out on social media. The course looks fantastic. One of those that's got to be a bucket list to attend at some point in the future. Perhaps when we're close to retirement, Stephen, we'll be able to get ourselves up there.
It'd be nice, wouldn't it? We could cycle up there, get on our bikes and do a Tour de France up to Croix. Even though it's
I'll get the train.
Yes.
Cycle.
I've heard they run on time over in Switzerland as well, the trains, yeah.
They actually run, that'd be nice,
wouldn't it? Plenty of the names that we've been discussing are in attendance here, actually. Matt Fitzpatrick's the favourite. He opened up at 10-1 yesterday. 17-2 is the best price you're going to get now, so 8.5-1. Still being backed, likely to be 8-1 at best price. By the time they start, Ludwig Åberg 18-1, Nikolai Højgaard 18s, Adrian Meronk 20-1. Matt Wallace played well last week, 22-1. Again, he's been trimmed in. I'm sure Steve will tell us about that a little bit later on. Alexander Bjork 25-1, Bob McIntyre 28s, Adrian de Mondechassar 33-1, Rasmus same price 33-1. Bar those players that I've just mentioned, but yeah, plenty of the guys that are in with a shout of twisting Luke Donald's arm from the sidelines this week. No PGA Tour action, as Steve said, so we are getting a few each way or better each way terms this week. So 3, 6, 5, 8 places. William Hill have also gone 8 places each way, 50 odds as their standard market. So do check out and shop around before you place your bets this week, because there are some better terms available for the DP World Tour, which is good to see. Now, the course itself, it's a short, quirky kind of track. It's at altitude as well in the mountains. The yardage, 6,808 yards as a par 70. Now, we've got four short, sub 400-yard par fours. We've got back-to-back par fives on the back nine as well. It's a tree-lined, undulating test. Yeah, I think the thing to say with this is plenty of the holes play slightly different to the way the yardage describes, because there's the altitude to contend with. There's a lot of undulation on some of these holes. You know, some of them are far elevated or higher or lower than the tee to the green position. So do take the actual yardage on the scorecard with a pinch of salt, but it is short. It does play short because of the altitude as well. The greens are tiny. They're just small, bent power putting surfaces. So you need to have your wits about you, really, here this week. Now, the weather forecast, sunshine and showers is all I'm seeing. Nothing much to speak of in terms of wind either, 5 to 10 miles an hour maybe. Temperatures up to the high 60, so maybe 20 centigrade in the afternoons. Chilly mornings, which we often get, starting to come through at this time of year as well. So it's a strange dynamic in the mountains. You'll often find that the best rounds do tend to come in the afternoons, even though that kind of flies in the face of a lot of certain first round leader logic in the past. So as the air temperature warms up, the course plays a bit more consistently and plays a bit more a little more straightforward if there's not any other weather to contend with. So worth bearing in mind as you get towards the weekend. In terms of previous winners, going back to 2010, Miguel Angel Jimenez won here at 16-1. Thomas Bjorn won the year later, 55-1. Richie Ramsey, 80-1. Bjorn won again in 2013 at 40-1. David Lipsky, 125-1 in 2014. Danny Willett, 16-1. Alex Noren, 18-1. So plenty of relatively short prices coming through. Matt Fitzpatrick won the first of his two events in 2017 at 30-1 and then defended the year after at 12-1. And then most recent three winners were Sebastian Soderberg, 275-1. Rasmus Højgaard, 45s. And then last year, Tristan Lawrence, 30-1. So a couple of outliers there, but plenty of players kind of sub 50-1 and quite a bit shorter in some cases. If you look through the stats, well, you know, we've got data going back a long way. There's an awful lot of history on the stat sheets this week on the website. Traditional stats don't really give much away, to be honest. There's a mix of accurate types. There's a mix of players who've performed well on and around the greens. We've seen some longer hitters get themselves into the mix here, get into playoffs as well. It seems like there's plenty of different ways that you can navigate around this particular course. We have got strokes gain data from the last three renewals. As Steve said, there's that data aggregated for this week's field on the site as well. So you can take a peek through that data if you so wish. The most common stat from the last three renewals, strokes gain tee to green. Soderberg was ninth for strokes gain tee to green. Rasmus was eighth. Tristan Lawrence was second last year. So if you're picking out one key statistic for this week's test, and strokes gained tee to green probably is that one. But there's plenty of holes there that you can be aggressive on. You've got the driver par four as it goes through the stretch of short holes on the front nine and the back nine par fives as well. Get your drives away. The longer hitters can get themselves into a position to make birdies and eagles. So there are different ways, certainly different ways to attack this particular course. Some interesting trends in terms of incoming form as well. You don't always see this, but 9 of the past 12 winners all arrived here with a top 8 finish or better on their most immediate start. So some very immediate form coming into this could well be a positive. The last 4 winners in particular all had strong performances the start before. So those guys who played well or played well on their previous start could well be worth a look. Event form's a little murkier. Do get a lot of repeat winners here. I read through a couple of them earlier on, but even going back historically, there's an awful lot of players who've won 2 or 3 times here over the years. But the last 3 winners, Lawrence, Højgaard and Soderberg, all 3 of them were making their debut. So, you know, a rule that had existed for quite some time has been obliterated over the last 3 renewals. And, you know, you certainly can't discount or disregard any debutants coming into this market this week. So.
With that view, Paul, of, you know, basically a top 10 on your previous outing being a very good lead here, I'm going to make sure that in the podcast description, I'm going to put a link through to our combined table. We've got course form and current form linked together because I think you know, a lot of people would find that very useful.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting to see if that, you know, trends are there. You can assume that they're going to continue, but there's no, you know, there's no God-given right
why not.
someone should. But
when you're
looking at 9 of the last 12, you know, the last 4, absolutely. But when you look at 9 of the last 12, it would suggest that if you're coming in with a relatively hot hand, then you're going to be in a stronger position to contend here. So, I think if you boil it down, everyone can compete here. It isn't long, so it doesn't alienate the short hitters. You can get away with different styles of game. And you know, if you can hit a lot of greens, great. If you play well on around the greens, fantastic. You can scramble well and really get yourself a score accumulated around here. You can putt particularly well and get yourself in with the chance. So I wouldn't go down a rabbit hole of picking one particular style of player. it's more a case of who's going to turn up and play well, which, yeah, it does create some challenges when we get an event like that. Anyway, I've backed five. I've got one short one, one in the middle, and three that are, well, the three that were triple digits. There's been a lot of movement on the markets this week. So what I'll do, I'll go through each of those in three different segments, and I'll just bring you guys in after each one. The one that I've backed at the top of the market, and it is right at the very top of the market, 10-1, Matt Fitzpatrick opened yesterday, and that went 9-1, was still available just as we were starting to record, but that seems to have been snaffled up now. So as I said in the preamble, 8-1, I suspect, is the best price that you're going to be at. Again, you might get a little bit more from some enhanced win-only options out there. But Matt Fitzpatrick, clear favourite, and rightly so, I think. I mean, this guy's eighth in the world. He's the only player here in the world's top 50. So there's a big gulf between him and the rest of the field. Sixth in the world's point list, as we just run through in terms of Ryder Cup qualifying. Regardless of what happens, he's in the team. So I think he can just come here, play some golf and relax, get himself ready and tuned up for the events that are coming over the following month. For me, it's a similar justification, really, to when I was backing John Rahm earlier in the season. And if you give Matt Fitzpatrick 8-9 chances at this in his current form, does he win at least once? I think he probably does. He probably wins. If you'd run a computer simulation over this, I think he'd win once or twice, maybe even more. I think that justifies the price, and I think it justifies backing him here. Coming into this, second at the BMW Championship over on the PGA Tour playoffs, 13th last week at Eastlake. That's far, far better than the vast majority of the players here can even get remotely close to. And he's back to form. I mean, he's talking positively about his game. If you listen to some of the interviews and some of his comments prior to the, you know, the summer majors, prior to the US Open, prior to the Open Championship, he was fairly downbeat about the state of his game. He'd been struggling a little bit with injury, and his expectations were pretty low. He seems to be in a different place now. He's certainly talking up his game, and the statistics that are coming out of his game are far, far stronger as well. He was runner-up here in 2015, seventh the year later, won back-to-back, as I said a few minutes ago. All aspects of his game are working well. He top strokes game putting at the BMW Championship. For me, I think Fitzpatrick's got a great chance of completing his own personal Grand Soucière hat-trick this week. So, win only, Matt Fitzpatrick, easy start for my team. Any sub 50-1 guys for you? Any from you, Barry?
Very unimaginative for me this week. I'm kind of not unimaginative, just I can't see past a couple of your picks, so I've kind of followed you on them. So there's no point in me jumping in on the next one because you'll say it better than I will. And I've one or two that I might look at further out, but I'm going to just throw them at you later on and see what your thoughts are. So you can either rubbish them or say, yeah, that's a good, that's at least a not idiotic bet.
Yeah, fair enough. Steve, any sub 50s for you?
I had the advantage this week of having no golf to prepare for. So when I logged onto my system yesterday over a bowl of Weetabix, Bet365 had already put their market up. Fantastic, I thought. I get this out there on the podcast where you and I have no communication when we're doing our tips or anything. I've got no idea who you're putting up. You never have any idea who I'm putting up.
Well, yeah, we can read, quite rightly. So
we can read each other like a book, but we've worked together for over 14 years. Right, my first bet was Matt Fitzpatrick at 10-1 because I just looked at that market and you think to yourself, Matt Fitzpatrick coming off a second place at the BMW, was it, or third place,
yeah,
contending?
Yeah, second, yeah.
And then there or thereabouts last week, depends what way you look at it, I think he was top 12 without strokes, he was in the top 10 with strokes at the Tour Championship, best players in the world. Flies to a golf course that he absolutely loves. Yeah, thrives on. There's this little bit of a carrot with him and Fleetwood. It means nothing, but I expect it means something to him. he wants to pretend, you know, he wants to qualify automatically. It's something, you know, to you know, people, these pros remember this stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's all, I thought 10-1 against Åberg, who was next up at 16-1. That to me, that gap didn't make sense. It should be wider. Mm-hmm. So yeah, straight away, Matty Fitz, I was on. The second one that didn't make any sense to me was Matt Wallace. Now, Matt Wallace, when William Hill came out, I think they were second out to market, and they were only six places each way, which I took. They had him priced up at 40-1. So I plunged on Matt Wallace at 40-1. He's now 22-1. And you look at Wallace, he's the sort that when he's actually hitting some greens and in form, we saw this at, he finished seventh at the Valspar in March and then went to Corrales and won that on the PGA Tour. So he's got his PGA Tour credentials all sorted for the next couple of seasons. He's got his full card. Just on the DP World Tour, we just know with Wallace, when he's playing good golf, he can get over the line. I don't think he's got any pretensions of getting on the Ryder Cup team or anything like that, but when he's in form, he's always worth following, and especially at that price at 40-1. So, yeah, I took Fitz at 10s with 365 and Matt Wallace at 40-1, 10 o'clock yesterday morning with William Hill. So those are my two in that price range.
Got to say, that Wallace price was just obscene, wasn't it? You know, the guy finished second last week and finished second here last year.
I had to move quickly, but I was straight on it because clearly it was going to last milliseconds.
Yeah, it's madness. As you say, you know, it was lopped straight back down to kind of 25-1 and still being backed in now. So, yeah, no, that very nice spot.
That. I don't know about you guys. I just with all of this pressure on so many players, Ryder Cup, I'm picking players that aren't involved. Really, I mean, Fitzpatrick is kind of involved, but he's not involved because he knows he's on the team. It's just a box-ticking exercise. But all of these other guys, Åberg, Nicolai Højgaard, Maronk, Robert McIntyre, Rasmus, I'm staying away.
Yeah. No, I can see.
I think their win equity is kind of compromised the extra pressure.
Yeah. You know, push comes to shove, some of these guys they're gonna feel the heat, and you know, so some of them are gonna be protecting. Well, you know, Bob McIntyre could be protecting a position rather than going all out to win. So yeah, there's a lot of intricacies in those players who are, you know, in with a theoretical chance of twisting Luke's arm. A little bit further down, I think. This could be the week that we see if Fitzpatrick won too. So I've also backed Alex Fitzpatrick. Now, he opened up at 66s with Unibet with six places. 55-1s out there now with extended places. So pick your poison with that. But yeah, I think it could be a Fitzpatrick 1-2. The younger brother, Matt's younger brother, really has been impressive, hasn't he? There's lots of symmetry between the two results from the two players, actually. Both of them were runner-up the week before last. 13th and 14th, respectively, last week in their respective events. Perhaps it will be a 1-2 this week. Perhaps they'll get into a playoff and be fighting out a Fitzpatrick playoff this week. We shall see. It's his debut here, but you'd imagine that he's picked his brother's brains about the course over the years. May well have come and watched him earlier on when he was competing and contending back in the day. Can't quite remember if I saw him in the crowd or not. But playing some tidy stuff at the moment. 17th at the Open Championship. That was his major debut. Won at St Melian on the Challenge Tour a few weeks back. And then 14th last week in Prague. And some impressive numbers coming out of that as well. 18th for strokes gained off the tee. 7th for tee to green. 2nd for strokes gained approach. I think that Alex Fitzpatrick is one of these players that we will see progress quickly. I think we may well see him get into the winner's circle on the DP World Tour before too long, and perhaps having the interest of his brother being favourite here playing this week, perhaps that will spur him on to give his brother a run for his money. So I wouldn't be surprised to see two Fitzpatricks at the top of the leaderboard this week. I haven't got any more that were below 100-1. So if either of you guys have got any sub hundreds, then chime in now. Otherwise, we'll move on.
Go on, Barry.
I have two. So first one is Nathan Kimsey. I'm kind of banking on the fact that he's just jumping on the back of the Brown and Clements wins, and that he might have a tenuous friendship with them. But has had a nice string of results, 10th, 2nd, 25th, and 31st. Second was in the Barbasol, so he'll have probably still riding a crest of a wave from that, which is only just over a month ago. He is, where are we? First in driving accuracy on tour. Don't need massive distance here. He can hit it long enough at 296. He's fourth for greens in regulation. His putts per green in regulation are about bang average, maybe a tiny bit behind that. But if he can just get a slightly decent week with a putter and match it up with his stats, he could go okay.
Mm. Yeah, we mentioned him. Steve mentioned him a couple of weeks back because he performed well. Say runner up to.
I was on him last week.
That's right. Yeah, he'd finished runner up to Vincent Norman, hadn't he? So it's.
So he's guaranteed to go well now that he missed.
Unfortunately for Barry, I'm on him again this week as well. I managed to get 80-1 on Kimsey yesterday.
Nice.
With 3.65. So yeah.
Lovely.
This is one of those really awkward podcasts where we all seem to be on the same players. I do apologise, listen.
But you can hear in the surprise in our voices we're actually not conferring about our picks before. The other one is in around that price as well. I haven't got the bets on yet because the green coloured bookie from Ireland is their sights down at the moment, and I just have some. They've been actually going quite well recently. Paddy Power at their golf offering after spending a few months of turning out utter crap markets. So I'll figure out between that or 365 to back Kimsey and then Ryo Hizatsune. Excuse me if I've butchered the name. But again, a decent set of recent results. 13th in driving accuracy, 14th in greens and regulation. A little bit better on the putts per green in regulation at 66th. So based on that, I'm grabbing a bet on him.
Yep. Yeah, and he was 14th last week, but he was quite a bit better than that for some time as well last week, wasn't he?
Yeah, course debut here, but that fits in with the recent course debutants narrative. So,
yeah, I wouldn't be overly worried about it, not from what we've seen over the last 3 years. But interesting pick. So you're on Kimsey, Steve. Any other below that level?
Alex Fitzpatrick. So I'm afraid I'm on him at 66-1 with William Hill.
I joined that train too. I got a ticket to it. Yeah.
We're all in serious trouble.
Sink or swim together.
Yeah. The one that tempts me around there is our friend Thurston Lawrence, but he's defending, isn't he? So,
yeah.
Very hit and miss. Very, very hit and miss, Lawrence.
Yeah. Yeah, he is a bit. I was on him last week and there wasn't a great deal there.
No.
But He can pop up from nowhere and he can win, which is something that can't always be said about some of the other players in and around that number. So, yeah, I've left him alone, but it wouldn't surprise, would it? It wouldn't surprise to see him pop up on another altitude test where we know he comes to the fore and play well. The three longer prices I've backed Henny Duplessis. I backed him 100-1. He's been nibbled into 90s. Still got 90s for some extended places out there. Now, Duplessis appeared a lot on my preparation work for this that I did at back end of last week. So Steve would concur with this, I'm sure. If you're doing a little bit of prep work, you get a player catches your eye, and you know damn well they're just going to go and ruin their price by playing well the week previously, immediately before when you're planning to back them. But in the respect of this event, where we're kind of looking for players who've got some immediate decent form coming in, that's probably not such a bad thing. Third for strokes gained off the tee, seventh for strokes gained tee to green, 11th for greens in regulation for the season. That's where he kind of caught my eye. And then he did pop up last week. He briefly took the lead on Saturday, actually. He got himself into a great spot. He was 7-under through 10 or 11 holes, something like that, on Saturday. And then just kind of faded away after that. Finished 25th in the end. So it has kept him relatively under the radar, although he has been nibbled in, as I say. Won a couple of times on the Sunshine Tour over the years. He was second at the inaugural LIV event last year at Centurion. Second at Stain City earlier this year. So he's getting closer at higher levels. 16th here on debut last year. And he was particularly poor around the greens on that week. He was second for strokes gained around the green last week. So if that's the final piece of the jigsaw, then potentially Henny Duplessis will be contending for his breakthrough DP World Tour title this week. Nick Backham's another one I've backed. 100 to 1 best price now. Last three winners are here. All course debutants, as we said. And the, given that they've all come in, come in off a top 10 finish as well, if you look through the numbers, and this goes back to what Steve said about putting those stats up, four players fit the bill of coming in as a player, course debutant, and a top 10 finish previous week. The four are Ludvig Åberg, Yannick Paul, Todd Clements, who won last week, and Nick Backham, who was tied fourth. So I've backed Backham. Three wins on the Pro Golf Tour as an amateur over the years. Progressed through Q School last year and won at Stain City at the Johnson's Workwear Open early this year, again at altitude. Perhaps we'll see another altitude performance from him here. Longer hitter, but we do know the longer hitters can get themselves in the mix here. Fifth the strokes gain off the tee for the season to date. That works very nicely. And some decent numbers coming in off last week as well. Third for off the tee, fourth for tee to green, fourth for around the green. Interesting runner, I think, Nick Backham this week at around about 100 to 1 you're going to get him nowadays. And finally, the other one I've backed is Eduardo Molinari. Again, 80 to 1, the best price you're going to get out there. There was a little bit of 100 to 1 about him yesterday, but that's been nibbled in. Interesting storyline with Eduardo, actually. He was chatting to Adam Scott at the Scottish Open about his putting performance. We know with Eduardo, he's been struggling with a putter for years now, 5-6 years. It's just not worked for him. And he was chatting to Adam Scott on the putting greens about it. Scott showed him the long putter, has switched to that, and the results so far have been really strong. He feels much more comfortable with it. He's talking about the confidence with the short putts in particular, which we'd seen him miss so many tiddlers over the years. But if it's improved his confidence with that, then he could be a dangerous player. Look at his numbers as well from last week. He was 11th overall at the Czech Republic. That course doesn't particularly suit. So that was an interesting point in itself. But he was 9th for putts per greens in regulation. That was his best infield ranking for 4 years. He was 1st for total putts. That was his best infield ranking for 9 years with the putter. So the putter for him has certainly taken a massive step forward just by switching it to a long putter and giving him a new bit of confidence to go out there and attack these golf courses. Still getting to grips with it. It's, you know, he's by his own estimation, the long putts are still not quite, he's still not quite got to grips with it fully. But if he's confident over the short putts, which is where a lot of the problem was, then I think that makes him dangerous. He was second here back in 2010. Knows the course, can play the course. Perhaps we'll see a bit of a revival from him this week. So that's me, my five: Molinari, Backham, Duplessis, and both Fitzpatricks. So any other longer prices from you boys? Barry?
No, surprisingly enough, I think I'm done. So yeah, I've joined you on Fitzpatrick and Molinari. And then I have my two there, Kimsey and Hitsatsune.
Splendid. Any others from you, Stoke?
Not really. I might take this Backham chap, I think. Yeah, he seems the sort. Was it fourth for tee to green last week?
Yeah. Some really good numbers coming out of him last week. Mm. He went right off the boil after that win at Stain City, and then a few weeks off, and then just popped straight back with a fourth place finish last week. And yeah, some decent metrics in there. So he could go well. Seriously, could go well at a three-figure price.
someone that can hit the ball a long way and has an around the green game. I don't think that's a bad mix for around here with these tiny greens.
No, and you can club down. The altitude takes so much away from this that you can play it in a variety of different ways. But some of the holes, if you can take them on with the driver, find the fairway, you're going to be setting yourself up for birdies and eagles. So, plenty of ways to skin this particular cat.
I think so. Let's just see where he is. This is all inspiring stuff for the podcast. I'm just grabbing 100 to 1, 8 places each way with Bet365 by their each way extra facility. There you go. I'll take that. So that Nick Backham finishes my selection. So I've got Matty Fitz, Matt Wallace, Kimsey, Alex Fitz, and Nick Backham. I always like this event. I have to say, the views are spectacular. It's one of the European Tour, DP World Tour's stead fast events. Been there for donkey's years. Always a decent field. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it this way.
Mm. Yeah.
I hope your bets go well, chaps.
Yeah, best of luck, boys.
You guys too, because we're all on a lot of the same stuff. So
yeah, all synced together.
Yep.
If you're with us this long on the podcast, just give us a follow on X, will you? That'd be absolutely fabulous. So Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. I'm at Bamford Golf. And of course, 5-star reviews. We crave them. We love them. So if you could send a 5-star review in via Apple or just press that 5-star button on Spotify, that'd be fantastic. I don't think we're a million miles away from 500 Spotify 5-stars. So if we could get there by the end of the year, that'd be absolutely superb. Best of luck to listeners with their bets. We'll be back. What have you got next week, Paul?
It's the Irish Open next week, K-Club. So Rory's coming over. Rory Lowry, Hatton, Billy Horschel. Some good players coming over.
Should be very good. So we'll be back for the Irish Open. See you again soon. Cheers.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system, the golf betting system.